There's March sadness gripping the nation as we enter another week without the escape and relief of sporting events. But that hasn't meant a break in sports talk. Was Virginia Tech's women's basketball team finally NCAA tournament bound? And could fall football camp be affected by the spread of COVID-19? We'll talk about all that and much, much more this week on Teal and Barber. Welcome in to episode 5 of Teal and Barber, the Richmond Times-Dispatch and Richmond.com's Virginia Tech, UVA, and ACC sports podcast. I'm Mike Barber, ACC beat writer for the paper, and I'm happy as always to be joined by my co-host, 13-time sports writer of the year, and the Virginia Sports Hall of Famer, David Teal. David, these are some interesting times that we find ourselves living and working in. So first off, most importantly, how's everyone doing in the Teal household?
Well, Mike, we doubled down on interesting yesterday with the governor's announcement that schools will be closed for the remainder of the academic year. And I know that I don't mean to laugh, but it does create a lot of challenges for working families such as ours and so many of our listeners and yours. And that's just among the many challenges that folks face these days, and we're just trying to make the best of it. We're very fortunate. We're all healthy. We're not at each other's throats yet, and we hope to keep it that way.
That is a good update. I'm glad to hear that. And you know, David, you're right. I think there's like a, for me at least, a mental hurdle. And I think we expected that maybe the kids wouldn't be going back to school this year. But there was sort of like a mental hurdle when it was officially announced that maybe it did seem a little more daunting in terms of homeschooling and all that time. And I was really enjoying a couple of weeks of tight family time. And I think it's a little bit more daunting now with that announcement.
It is. And I think it makes it a little more daunting for our children as well. I mean, as much as they say they love us being their parents, and I think they do, they miss their friends, man. And, you know, ours is an only child, and I really feel for her because she doesn't have a sibling. And she's stuck with her foolish old father and her sweet mother. And that makes it a little more difficult. And, you know, like everybody, we're video conferencing. She chats with her grandma every night and maybe even reads a chapter of her book to her. But it's not the same. I mean, she wants to go to grandma's house and be with grandma, and she wants to be in school, and I don't blame her.
Yeah, it is definitely hard. And, you know, with for us, we've got the 9-month-old, but we've also got the 6-year-old, and we take the 6-year-old out. We do these family walks around the neighborhood, and sometimes she'll see a neighbor or a friend, and we're kind of like, okay, you got to stay on opposite sides of the street. And that's hard for a 6-year-old to understand. I will tell you, we had some fun the other day. She has one of those motorized Power Wheels Jeep deals. She took that out, and we had her best friend. He has a little motorized tractor, and we put them 10 feet apart, but we let them sort of drive convoy style down the road. And it was really adorable. And I think they just needed to see, you know, hey, everybody's okay. People are, you know, the same things that are happening in our house are happening in other houses. And, you know, it's true for the adults too. We get some interaction, David, because we do this show. We interview, we do video, you know, calls with athletes and coaches as our work continues. But a lot of people don't have that. And the other night we got together, and I say got together, it was all virtual online, but with 6 other couples, and we got a couple of bottles of wine each and some snacks, and we sat down and we had sort of the lamest party you could have, but it was reassuring, I think, to everybody, just, you know, seeing everybody and realizing that we are kind of all in this together.
Yeah, it's really cool that technology allows us to commune like that. Our church is putting the weekly service online, so we call it up on Facebook and have it up on the smart TV, and do as best we can. On Sunday morning, we created our own NCAA tournament bracket, and then Laura and I rolled dice to see which teams advanced in the bracket. And we had a Final Four of Michigan, Maryland, BYU, and Seton Hall, which really wasn't all that unbelievable. It was 2 3-seeds and 2 6-seeds in our bracket, which given this season wasn't out of the realm. And we ended up having Brigham Young, Bronco Mendenhall would approve, winning the national championship over Seton Hall.
So I think what the Teal family has proven without a doubt is that guessing without looking at the names, without any of the expertise, is just as good for filling out a bracket, really. And I think you drive that point home. That's awesome. And a great way, I think, for, you know, especially in your family. I know you talked on a previous episode about how excited your daughter gets about Selection Sunday and the brackets and doing
that. She does, yeah.
So it's nice to find ways to, you know, it's kind of ways to keep things normal. And, you know, you referenced it. Imagine this was 1984. Imagine this was 1985, 1980. We wouldn't have this technology. We wouldn't do this. And social distancing would be a lot more challenging without some of this stuff. I'll tell you, one of the things that came up in that video party we had, my wife and a number of her friends are JMU graduates, as are you. And the Dukes have a new basketball coach.
They do.
Mark Byington. He agreed to a 6-year deal late last week. We got to know him a little bit as an assistant at Virginia Tech. What do you make of this hire?
Well, I think in many ways, Mike, it's standard when you fire a coach, you end up hiring the opposite, right? And Lewis Rowe came with deep, deep JMU ties, but what did he not have? Head coaching experience, right? Yeah. What does Mark Byington bring? Serious head coaching experience. I mean, he was at Georgia Southern, what was it, 7 seasons? Do I have that correct?
Yeah, 7 years and, there.
And the last 3 years, they won at least 20 games and 4 times in his career there. And he's used to a rebuild. I mean, he took over a struggling program at Georgia Southern. He takes over a struggling program in Harrisonburg. He clearly knows the state, having worked at Virginia and Virginia Tech and being from Salem. He knows the CAA, having played at UNC Wilmington and also having been an assistant under Bobby Crimmins at the College of Charleston. So I think he checked a lot of boxes that you would want to have checked when you go searching for a coach.
Yeah, you make a great point about the head coaching experience. People were asking me, who's JMU going to hire? Where are they going to go? And I said, I have no idea. But I guarantee you it's going to be somebody who's been the big whistle, somebody who's sat in that lead chair. And you're right that there is sort of this, when things aren't going well anyway, a flow of, hey, whatever you had, let's do the opposite. But I think there's always a safety in taking a guy who's done that, because as much as assistants are important, and we've been around some great assistant coaches who didn't really make it as head coaches, there is a difference in the two jobs, isn't there?
Oh, there's a huge difference, and the responsibility, and Mike, you know as well as I, as do our listeners, that especially at the high levels, head coaching has become CEOing more than the strategy, more than the X's and O's. You are the chief executive officer of a money-making enterprise, and that is a skill, and that is a learned skill. And part of it is natural, but you have to evolve into it. And some men and women have it, and others don't. And I'll tell you what, I don't think there's any way of knowing in certainty which ones do and which ones don't. There have been so many coaching hires, Mike, that I thought were, they crushed it. This is going to work. And lo and behold, no, didn't work for whatever reason. And it's not because he or she couldn't coach. It's because of circumstances or program management, or you just don't know. And then others that you think, no way. Like when Dabo Swinney got the Clemson job, right? Everybody's like, are you joking me? This is a disaster waiting to happen. And hello.
Yeah, there's a guy in Dabo Swinney with zero experience with that other stuff, the big picture stuff you're talking about. He's a wide receiver coach. He becomes the interim, and it turns out he's pretty good at the big picture and yeah. running the whole thing, isn't he? And I'll tell you, when you say CEO, Mark Byington just became the CEO of a organization, a company, if you will, that's moving into a nice new facility.
Yes.
That's going to be a lift for him, won't it?
I would think so. What is it? $88 million. And by the way, they hit much more wealthy alums than me. That's for sure. But and I give them credit too, Mike. They downsized.
Yeah.
And you know, I think they're going to create much more of a home court advantage there by creating demand and just bringing the crowd closer. I think it's got a chance to be, you know, I go back to when the home games were not at the Convocation Center, but at Godwin Hall. And that place, that's where the original quote-unquote electric zoo was coined. And you couldn't hear yourself thinking there. And that's what JMU aims to create. And truth be told, I don't think there's any reason that they can't reprive that. This is a school that's got resources. This is a school whose football program proves that they can win at the highest level. They just, for many, many reasons, and you covered the program, so you're probably better versed than I, they just haven't, they've hit and missed on basketball.
Yeah, and a lot of missing and a lot of big missing that just seems to have dug them some holes. And then you look at, you know, Matt Brady's stint, who preceded Lewis Rowe, and I thought things there were really going in the right direction, going in a positive direction overall. He had gotten that program elevated, but for whatever reason, and there were a lot of reasons, Matt and JMU just never clicked together. And I believe he's still an assistant at Maryland these days. He's an excellent yes. basketball coach. But to your point, that was one of those situations where some of the other stuff just didn't fit, and they were winning on the court, but it wasn't going to last. It wasn't going to be sustainable with that relationship.
Yeah, and that was a shame, because he really did seem, or he does seem, like a heck of a coach, and he came with big whistle experience, correct?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, he'd been very successful at Marist, and
yep.
Just really, you know, I always called him the shot doctor. If Matt had one, you know, could do one thing, he'd like to be locked in a gym with a kid working on his shot, and he's just an excellent teacher of basketball. But again, it goes to your point that head coaching job, and every head coaching job is a little different, and that one just for whatever reason wasn't quite the fit. As we speak about coaches, you know, we've had a chance since COVID-19 has wiped out spring sports to talk to a lot of coaches. And, you know, for me, maybe the most passionate was wrestling coach Steve Garland over at UVA, whose program had its season cut short just before the NCAA championships. And you know the drill. I mean, in wrestling, that's what you're going for. That's what you're building for. In Blacksburg, we had the chance to talk with women's basketball coach Kenny Brooks, another former JMU guy, former JMU coach,
right.
and his star point guard, Tasia Cole, who's from Richmond. And, you know, this is a program that hasn't been to the NCAA tournament since 2006, and their season ended right before Selection Monday, I guess, for the women. They looked NCAA tournament bound. That's a real punch in the gut, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. And you and I went back and forth on email about this early before you did your story on Kenny and Tasia. You know, they were, what, number 38 on the RPI? The women still use the RPI as opposed to the men using the net. And their strength of schedule, I believe, was in the top 60. They had gone 11-7 in the ACC. You would think they were pretty well positioned for an at-large bid, their disappointing loss to Wake Forest in the ACC tournament aside. And yeah, the fact that they hadn't been in 14 years, the program had not, and they had been aiming and aspiring, and just when you think you've gotten there, bam. You know, it's not going to happen. You don't get that chance. And that's got to be really difficult to deal with. But at the risk of being cliche, it is a teaching moment where adults have to explain to one another and to young men and women under their charge that, yes, there is a greater good here, and that these cancellations were, in fact, necessary.
Yeah, that's a great point. And it's a vibe or a response I've gotten. And we've talked to a ton of athletes in different sports, different schools, just since this has happened. And I think it's been very telling in a good way that all of them make the point of, hey, we get it. We understand this is bigger than us. This is, when I talk to Tayshia Cole, you really feel for her, right? Graduate transfer. Right. She came to Virginia Tech to reunite with Kenny Brooks, who she knew as a high schooler at LC Byrd. This was her goal. Her dream was to get this team to the NCAA tournament. But she's in that group of, hey, I get it. I get why I'm isolated at home in Richmond with my family. I get it why we need to slow the spread of this disease. I get all of that. But I think it's also, it is healthy for people to look a little bit, maybe selfishly, and say, hey, here's why it personally hurt me. And here's what I personally lost. And, she made a great point. She said, hey, if this virus didn't happen, we'd be there, meaning the NCAA tournament. We'd be in the NCAA tournament. But she said, it just doesn't have the same feeling because technically we didn't get there. She said, I just wish we could finish the job. And I think that's the thing for a lot of these spring sport athletes and a lot of these winter athletes who were headed to their championships. You've already put in the work. You've already done so much. You've already gotten rolling. They just wanted the chance, man, to finish the job.
They did. And that is a perfectly natural reaction. But I would encourage those athletes, Mike, be they high school, college, professional, whose seasons were cut short, never, ever, ever think that all that work that you put in was for naught. Because look at all that you accomplished just in the striving, how you pushed yourself, how you learned about yourself, how you bonded with teammates and coaches and fans. And those are things that, number one, can never be taken away. And number two, you will always remember and you will carry with you and use in your future endeavors, be they athletic or otherwise.
That is very well said. And I think a lot of those athletes have kind of gotten that point. I just got off the phone before we were recording this here on Tuesday morning. And I just got off the phone with some lacrosse players at Virginia Tech, and they're actually still on campus or in their off-campus apartments. They're from Northern Virginia. The spread is a little worse there. They didn't want to endanger their families if they've been exposed, and vice versa. And they're heartbroken. They're heartbroken that their season was taken away. At least one of them is going to go on to a job and is done now playing college lacrosse. But they talked about what you just talked about, that they're looking at the silver lining of this time with their teammates, this time they go for runs on the Huckleberry Trail, as a team with a little more distance maybe than normal. They've been getting together and watching horror movies, binge watching horror movies. So there will be some happy and positive memories from this. You're absolutely right, beyond just the sting. And one of the things, though, that we talked about with Kenny Brooks's team, and were they going to be in the tournament? Were they headed there? And I think we both think so. But it brings up another question of, should the NCAA have released a bracket for men's and women's basketball? David, I know you and the family did it. Do you think the NCAA should have put out a bracket?
I think the easy answer is yes, Mike. I think the realistic answer is no. And let me explain why. Because the assembling, the selection of the field and the seeding and the bracketing are laborious tasks. I have been through a mock selection. I went to NCAA headquarters in Indianapolis with some of my media colleagues many years ago, and we did a two-day mock selection. And it was 8 hours a day, and it was intense, and it was nonstop, and it was incomplete. It was nothing. It didn't even approach what the actual selection committees go through. So to have asked the selection committee members for women's and men's Division I basketball to reconvene. And I'm not talking about reconvening in person. Do it via Zoom. Do it however you want to do, with all that they had going on back in their respective conferences and individual institutions. You know, the chairman of the Division I men's committee is Kevin White, the AD at Duke. Another member of the committee is A-10 Commissioner Bernadette McGlade. They had a lot going on in their day jobs. Their day jobs were all encompassing. They didn't have 2 or 3 days to sacrifice to give the bracket the time that it deserved. And half baking it wouldn't have worked, because then maybe somebody like a Virginia Tech, that they might have said, oh, okay, let's throw them in, but at the expense maybe of somebody who might also have deserved to get in. So it wouldn't have been, I don't think, fair. I don't think it was a lot easier said than done, I guess, is my point.
That is the perfect point, because I think a lot of people thought, hey, for me as an athlete, I wish I saw my name in that bracket. And yes, Nobody really talked about the flip side of, well, what if your name wasn't in the bracket? Mm-hmm. Why burst the bubble for all of those teams that wouldn't have got in? My argument would have been, because I agree with you completely, my argument would have been, why don't you put out a list of the 80 teams that were in serious consideration, and let them know, hey, we were looking at you to put you in the NCAA tournament. I think that would have been a nice, fair way to do it. And to your point, wouldn't have overly taxed the committee. You know, they've gotten that far into their work. Put that out there. Say, hey, these are schools that we think were NCAA tournament worthy, and we didn't really get to figure out the last in, the last out. But I would have loved to have seen that out there. Hey, a bracket would have been fun. A tournament would have been even better. And that got me thinking about our topic for Who You Got.
Thanks, Mike. Our first question this week is about championships. Everybody knows the Final Four is one of the most watched championships in all of sports. Sunday at the Masters is obviously special. No spectacle is bigger than the Super Bowl. And who doesn't love an absolutely great World Series? If you could only have one major sports championship to take place in a year, which one would it be, David?
Well, just because of recency bias and what we're missing most these days, I'm going to pick the NCAA men's basketball tournament. And the NFL playoffs, that they go over a four-week span, but really there's only, I think, 13, 14 games involved. Let's see, 4, 8, 12, 13 games. The NCAA tournament, guys, is 67 games over 3 weeks, and each one of them has the potential for magic. You know, the college football playoff, that's 3 games. 2 semis and a final, and the semis are usually and the final is often epic. But to me, because of the length, that 3 week span and the number of teams involved across the country, to me, that's the one that I think is missed most, and that certainly that I would miss most.
So David's in with the Final Four. Mike, what you got?
Yeah, that was a close second for me, but I've always been a baseball guy. For people who don't know, before I came down to Virginia, I worked at Major League Baseball and worked with the Yankees and the Mets up in New York City. And when they had the strike year and there was no World Series, I remember that, and it still kind of twists my stomach a little bit. So I'll take the baseball postseason. I'll take the potential for those 7-game series. There's a magic in the NCAA tournament in that it's one and done, and that back and forth, and one day and then 2 days later you play again. But I love that flow of a 7-game series. I love the flow of thinking, who's pitching this day? Who's pitching next day? Are you going to hold somebody back? And there's nothing to me in sports, and this is every sport, there's nothing better than a game 7 in a playoff series. So give me the baseball postseason, and as a bonus, get my Yankees in there so I can really enjoy watching.
Diehard Nats fan Jill Teal approves of your message.
Well, maybe the Yankees-Nats World Series would be a fun one to watch. David, we've spent a lot of time in the past few weeks, understandably, looking back at what might have been in sports, and especially college sports, and if not for the spread of COVID-19. And But it was interesting talking with UVA football coach Bronco Mendenhall last week. And Mendenhall, I mean this respectfully, I describe him as an almost maniacal preparer. He's just got binders and books and plans, and that's the way he tackles problems and situations. And it's really the way he tackles kind of day-to-day life.
It is.
Right? I mean, that's just, he's one of those guys that he researches and he plans, right?
Yes. Oh, he's got every minute planned. And in that way, and you know this as well, he's like our old friend Buzz Williams.
I knew exactly where you were going with that. You're right. I remember an assistant telling me that he used to have to drive Buzz from the practice facility to the arena. Now, if you're not familiar with Virginia Tech's campus, I'm a horrible golfer, and I can easily hit the arena from the practice with a 9-iron. I mean, it's right there, but that was wasted time, right, to walk across that parking lot. Some guys are just like that, and coaches in particular. And what struck me in our conversation with Bronco is he was already preparing thoughts about how things would affect the fall season. You know, what if fall camp is impacted? What if the start is pushed back? And he even brought up the idea of college football this year dumping its non-conference slate and playing just league games. Now, it's probably way too early to start fretting about the loss of non-conference games. Or is it? David, what are your thoughts?
No, I don't know that it is too early, Mike. I've certainly given it a lot of thought, especially after our conversation with Bronco last week. And by the way, you mentioned how he, and I think he would take it as a compliment, by the way, the maniacal preparer, which he absolutely is. I think no matter what the 2020 season looks like, I think that trait in Bronco is really going to benefit Virginia just because of how he operates and how organized he is. And I just think it's going to pay dividends. Maybe it'll be a win here or a win there, but somewhere along the line, that is really going to pay off. And as far as a condensed season goes, I started thinking in two ways. Number one, how impossible would it be for the College Football Playoff Selection Committee to choose teams at the end of the year absent non-conference play?
That's right. I
mean, how do you compare the SEC and the Big 12 and the Pac-12 and the ACC and the Big 10 if there's been zero interaction among those conferences?
It's a great point. Let me throw this at you. Maybe this spurs them to expand that playoff for a year as a trial. Maybe they say, hey, we didn't get the crossover games. We don't know which conference is stronger. So we're going to take, and you've heard this before, every conference champion, then the wild cards, play it out. Could this spur us to another level, or are we too contractually obligated at this point?
I think they're too contractually obligated because it's so close.
Yeah.
You know, if we were looking at 21 or 22, it might be possible. And let's also not forget this. How would you compare the 8-game schedules of the ACC and the SEC with the 9-game schedules of the Pac-12, the Big 12, and the Big 10? I mean, it would be so thorny. I've always thought I would enjoy being on the College Football Playoff Selection Committee because they do have, you know, one retired media person on there. But I would want no part of a season like that where you just had no data points. It would be so difficult, and especially the 8-9 disparity as well. I hope it doesn't come to that, but part of me wonders whether the season will start on time.
Yeah, I think it's fair. And I say this, you know, half tongue in cheek and half very seriously, but my wish list is down now to my friends and family staying as healthy as possible and football coming back in August. I just, yes. I need to think that normalcy is out there. And I'll tell you what helped with that normalcy was the bulk of the conversation with Coach Mendenhall actually centered around what might have been happening this week if spring practice was going on. And one of interesting sort of side notes here is UVA is going to be breaking in a new quarterback. Bryce Perkins is gone. Whatever happens with his NFL future, we'll see. But they're breaking in Brennan Armstrong, and spring would have been a big opportunity for that kid to develop.
Oh, no question. And Bronco Mendenhall is clearly very high on Brennan Armstrong. He does not engage in hyperbole just for its sake. And when I asked Mendenhall down at the Orange Bowl in December to gaze ahead and to describe Brennan Armstrong for us, the comparison he made was to Taysom Hill. Well, hello, anybody who watched the New Orleans Saints playoff game this year saw Taysom Hill, you know, at his best, at his versatile and athletic best. And need I remind folks, I wrote his stats down here. In his sophomore year at Brigham Young under Bronco Mendenhall, Taysom Hill threw for 2,938 yards and rushed for 1,344.
Yeah, the offense. That is the offense that they talked about recruiting Bryce Perkins to. And then I think Bryce was even more dynamic and explosive than they anticipated. Mm-hmm. I think Brennan, to your point, I think Brennan is the perfect fit for that offense. You know, it was interesting to hear Bronco acknowledge, hey, Brennan Armstrong's not going to be the dynamic runner that Bryce Perkins was. He's not going to be hurdling people, but he's going to get maybe the same yards, just a little bit tougher, different style. And I think you're right. I think exactly what they were doing at BYU, exactly what Robert and I, the offensive coordinator, and Jason Beck, the quarterback coach, exactly what they envisioned for UVA. Hey, they envision it with this Armstrong kid.
Yeah, and it sounds like, you know, because Perkins, he makes things look so effortless, almost like he's not trying, which clearly he is, but the way he almost glides across the field is mesmerizing. And he also has this surreal poise about him where nothing gets him to change expression out there. Whereas if you listen to Bronco Mendenhall talk about Armstrong, he's the polar opposite. I believe the phrase he used was not volatile, but certainly emotional. So I picture Armstrong after maybe plowing for 6 or 7 yards for a first down, getting up and maybe flexing a little bit and kind of stirring things up.
I think you're absolutely right. He plays with more confidence. It was how the coaches explained it. More confidence than maybe he's earned so far at the college level. But that's a good characteristic. It's a good characteristic from your leader. And, you know, we saw how that position, and Bronco acknowledges, that position has a disproportionate impact on your offense and your team. Like, that's going to be your leader, no matter the makeup. And that's going to be the position that, if it plays well, you've got a chance. And if they play poorly, you don't have a chance. And when I think about Bryce Perkins, he certainly played well, gave them a chance, was a big reason they did what they did. He wasn't invited to the NFL scouting combine. You know, Bronco expressed his opinion on that. A few analysts I spoke with, one of them said this, David, flat out to me and didn't want to be quoted, but he said, I said, Bryce Perkins, I said, what's his chances of being a quarterback? He said, no chance, next question. I mean, it was not a discussion topic even. And that brings us to take it or leave it.
Thanks, Mike. Here's our second question this week. Take it or leave it. Former quarterback Bryce Perkins will make it in the NFL as a quarterback. Mike, take it or leave it.
I think he's going to make it, depending how you define that. I think that what we've seen from Lamar Jackson, how he's kind of done that dual threat thing on a higher level. Certainly we've seen it in the past with guys like Michael Vick, and we've seen it in the past with guys like Steve Young, but it's a different animal right now when you look at what Lamar's done. And I'm not saying that Bryce Perkins is as gifted a passer as Lamar Jackson. He's not. I get that. But if you're saying, is he going to make it as a quarterback? I think somebody's going to have him in camp. I think he's going to impress them the way he impressed all of us playing at UVA. I think he's going to get his shot and be on a roster. And yeah, I think it's going to be as a quarterback.
I'll agree with you, Mike. I'll take it as well. And the analyst you talked to who basically dismissed it, you know, next question, that's the kind of thinking that gets teams in trouble. You know, that's not even given the prospect a chance. I know you've got all the college tape and you can break it down, but I think you need to take the young man's measure and bring him into a camp and see what he can do with an offense, see how he leads in a huddle, and then make your judgment. I agree that at some point he will make a roster, and maybe it will be, you know, in situational type things, but he will not only make a roster, I think he will help a team in some way.
It makes a lot of sense. He certainly helped Virginia. One of the favorite things that I've read since we've lost games, we lost spring football, we're not seeing any Brennan Armstrong throws or any shots being made. One of the favorite things I've read since the spread of COVID-19 was your last column, David, on your favorite first and second round memories from the NCAA tournament. And obviously it came up in one of our questions, how much you enjoy that event. You have a new column coming out this week in the Richmond Times-Dispatch and at richmond.com. Same idea. Looking at the most memorable Sweet 16 and Elite Eight games you've covered. Obviously, you and I were both there for last year's thrilling Elite Eight game against UVA, Purdue, Kihei Clark, and Mamadi Diakite combining on that season-saving buzzer beater to force overtime. Obviously, people listening to this podcast know how the story ends. UVA ends up winning the national title. I'm not spoiling anything there.
Right?
Yeah. So sorry if I ruined your afternoon TV viewing. They end up winning. But I'm guessing that game made your list. What stands out to you from that game?
Yeah, oh, gosh. besides that play is number one is how coy Ty Jerome remains about his intent at the free throw line. And, oh, by the way, Carson Edwards. I mean, my goodness. 42, was it? It was 42 or 43. I think it was 42. It was ridiculous. I mean, most of the time, Virginia had him blanketed. It didn't matter. I mean, that young man had the game of a lifetime. And yes, that evening in Louisville will be mentioned prominently in this week's column, as will several other Virginia Elite Eight in Sweet 16 games, and maybe not one but two between Duke and Kentucky.
Yeah, Carson, 42 points in 44 minutes. And to your point, guarded from deep with guys on him. Virginia wins that one 80-75. And everybody remembers certainly Mamadi and Kihei and the shot and the missed free throw that was or wasn't intentional. And UVA, if you're listening out there and you just did that great activity where the Big Three live tweeted the championship game, let's get them to live tweet that Elite Eight game and see if we don't get some more insight into Ty Jerome's thinking. But certainly
that game was on tonight, by the way.
There you go. Destination viewing.
Yes. Depending on when you're listening to this, we're recording Tuesday afternoon. It's on tonight on the CBS Sports Network. They're showing in order UVA Purdue, UVA Auburn, UVA Texas Tech.
Yeah, those were pretty memorable. So, David, what else is going into this week's column? What other games from the Sweet 16, the Elite Eight rounds stand out to you?
Well, UVA NC State, the 83 West Regional Final. was Ralph Sampson's final collegiate game and the victory that propelled Jimmy V and NC State to the Final Four. I was there. VCU, Kansas in 2011. George Mason, Connecticut in 2006. Kentucky Duke in 1998. And then with a very different result, Kentucky Duke in 1992, which remains the greatest single sporting event I've ever witnessed. It was, from start to finish, stunning.
Take us through a little more of that one, because everyone remembers the shot, right? And even people who probably weren't alive or didn't watch remember the shot. Yeah. But there was so much more. I mean, that was, you can watch that game and turn it off. You wouldn't, but you could turn it off before the shot and have really enjoyed what you were watching.
Oh, yeah. It was remarkable. And CBS showed that the other day. And my former coworker at the Daily Press, Dave Fairbank, texted me. He said, man, he said, this just reminds me, and I think I can say this on a podcast, what a badass game that was. And he was right. I mean, Kentucky shot like 57% and lost because Duke shot 65%. You know, and Leitner went 10 for 10 from the field and 10 for 10 from the line. And oh, by the way, had that punk move of stepping on Aminu Timberlake's chest. But, you know, and Mike, here's how unflappable Leitner was. He gets that technical, richly deserved, which in today's game might have gotten him tossed because it had gone to the replay. But so he gets that technical, but the technical had come after Timberlake had fouled him. So Leitner had to go to the line with no one there. The whole building is booing him. And he just stepped up there and made them both. He's got this little Cheshire cat grin. And I was like, he is impervious. He really is. And Thomas Hill was great that game. Bobby Hurley hit big shots. Sean Woods and Jamal Mashburn for Kentucky. And oh, by the way, it's Patino against Krzyzewski. And it's Kentucky against Duke. And it's the top two seeds in the region. And it's Duke trying to become the first repeat champion since Bill Walton in UCLA in 1972 and 73. There's so much texture to this. And that's what made it so doggone riveting.
No doubt. We could do an entire, certainly episode, maybe an entire podcast on that game and the characters in that game. Maybe we'll get to that if we don't get any sports back sooner rather than later. But for now, that's our show for this week. Thanks for listening. You can get all our coverage of UVA, Tech, the ACC, and everything going on in our lives. Everything you need to know to keep your family safe and healthy at richmond.com. Our stories about the coronavirus and its fallout are free to read. Our Sports Plus option with all our sports coverage, that gives you access to everything for $6.99 a month, or sign up for a full year for less than $60. It's the best way to follow your team whenever it is they get back onto the fields and courts, and we certainly can't wait for that. Today's show was produced by Dean Hoffmeyer. Teal and Barber is a podcast of the Richmond Times Dispatch and Richmond.com. For David Teal, I'm Mike Barber. Thanks for listening. Be healthy and safe, and please join us again next week.